a traditional cloud platform, you're going to go in, you're going to put your credit card in there, you're going to put your PayPal or whatever that looks like, but you're, you know, putting in your personal details, you're going through that kind of KYC check, you're then spinning it up that infrastructure. Whereas you've got this whole blockchain space now where people own tokens, and those developers may want to, you know, rather than having to convert out their earnings from their tokens of however they've, you know, earned them, they want to just be able to spend, you know, in that currency. So it's like, how can we just provide a more native way that is familiar to Web3 or how the Web3 world wants to go? So kind of combining those two elements really is how we it came up with the Kudos blockchain as the kind of the base layer that was needed, because there was, you know, some customizations, but the base layer that was needed to be able to then execute the strategy, which is providing scalable compute to the blockchain ecosystem.
This podcast is sponsored by Coin ATM Radar. When buying crypto with cash, an ATM is much more reliable and safer than meeting some random person in a random place. And unlike an exchange, which could freeze your account, you truly own all the crypto you buy. With Coin ATM Radar, you could find crypto ATMs and other services where you can buy and sell cryptocurrencies for cash. On their website, you can search by coin, address, if the ATM supports selling as well as buying, and you can also search by geo area, country, state, city. You can also check and compare actual current fees at different ATMs. If you want to find out more, head over to coinatmradar.com, which is coinatmradar.com. Hey everyone, I have the fantastic pleasure of speaking with the one and only Pete Hill today. How's it going, man?
It's going really well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, so pleasure's mine.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we were mentioning, kind of in the pre-recorded part of this, we kind of know each other through Scott Cunningham, who's been on this channel quite a few times, and I've been on his a couple times. And he definitely suggested I reach out to someone from Kudos and, you know, kind of get to explore that. So I'm definitely down for that. And also, as I mentioned as well, I've been sort of starting to expand my horizons into the Cosmos verse as well. And so just all of that is very interesting. So why don't you just start out really quick, who you are, how'd you got into crypto and all that?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I'm Pete. People call me Kudo Pete. If you want to look up my Telegram handle or X handle, I'm not quite used to saying X yet. Are you? I'm not sure about that.
I'm not either, but no, I know whenever I type x.com, it resolves to twitter.com. So yeah, I think we all get a pass for calling it the wrong thing for a while now.
Just doesn't quite roll off the tongue, but anyhow. But yeah, Kudo Pete across those mediums, if you like. So who am I? So I'm one of the co-founders at Kudos. So we're a layer one blockchain that's built in the Cosmos ecosystem, which is one of the reasons why you have me here today. So we'll go into that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But what are we actually doing as a project? Is we are creating a scalable computing ecosystem, if you like. So, you know, if you're a DApp developer, if you're a layer one protocol that needs infrastructure to run, you know, validator nodes on, if you're platform, metaverse, blockchain, I mean, any of those kind of things, that, you know, the common thing is everything needs computing infrastructure underneath the hood. And, you know, we saw that as there's very limited options within the kind of blockchain space. So, you know, don't get me wrong, we're not the only ones. There are others that are kind of going into the decentralized computing, distributed computing as well. But there's limited options compared to the kind of more traditional world where you've got Amazon AWS and Microsoft Azure, etc. So that's kind of what we wanted to bring to the table. We've spent the last kind of 20 years within the cloud space industry. So we've come from that kind of old traditional set, and we wanted to kind of move that into the Web3 space. You know, how that looks differently is because there's a couple of things, right, within the Web3 spaces that we all got into this because we believe in decentralization and we believe in, you know, a fairer way to do things. How can we, you know, How can everyone have a chance of being able to benefit from these new networks? So there's kind of a piece there, and I'm sure we'll chat about, you know, how we're planning to get to that full decentralization point as we go through. The other part is that people want to connect in a different way now. So, you know, a traditional cloud platform, you're going to go in, you're going to put your credit card in there, you're going to put your PayPal or whatever that looks like, but you're, you know, putting in your personal details, you're going through that kind of KYC check, you're then spinning it up at that infrastructure. Whereas you've got this whole blockchain space now where people own tokens, and those developers may want to, you know, rather than having to convert out their earnings from their tokens of however they've, you know, earned them, they want to just be able to spend, you know, in that currency. So it's like, how can we just provide a more native way that is familiar to Web3 or how the Web3 world wants to go? So kind of combining those two elements really is how we came up with the Kudos blockchain as the kind of the base layer that was needed, because there was, you know, some customizations, but the base layer that was needed to be able to then execute the strategy, which is providing scalable compute to the blockchain ecosystem.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, let me hit on the Cosmos thing ahead of time, because obviously it's something that I'm very interested in as well, but also I'm getting a lot of my audiences might be more, you know, purely from the digital cash focus thing, as I'm slowly kind of like thrusting all this, the greater crypto world onto them. You know, it's sort of a collective learning process, right? So one reason, you know, I mean, the easiest way you know that Bitcoin is significant is because it was the first, and it's still top of the market caps. Another way you really know is just how many Bitcoin-based projects there are, as far as like the code base is lived on. And the same thing can kind of apply for Ethereum, where, you know, Ethereum, there's everything is EVM. You could argue that it's even greater than the Bitcoin ecosystem at this point. And then when you start to look up, like, okay, zero knowledge proofs, okay, Zcash has clearly pioneered some really cool things in this domain, and there's a whole bunch of things. And so it's kind of like, based on, you can't pay attention to everything, but you can pay attention to significant projects. And I kind of never got Cosmos in the beginning. I just didn't pay attention, to be honest. And then I started to notice that a whole lot of projects, especially ones I liked, were based on Cosmos. And so it kind of, you know, now I'm interested. So I don't know how deep you are into the Cosmos world, but do you want to briefly explain, you know, what Cosmos is? How is it kind of different from Ethereum, and then the whole IBC thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's take you on an adventure and jump into the Cosmos, right?
Absolutely. Rocket ship.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's something that we actually spend a lot of time kind of doing our research on. Is, you know, there's probably different ways that we can look at this, but if I start in this order, so, you know, when we were looking to build a blockchain, because of what we are doing on the compute side, which is what I alluded to first, there wasn't anything at the time that was around that allowed us to essentially build on top of that that existing chain, if you like, mm-hmm. and be able to deliver our kind of compute strategy. So I won't get too much into the details of that. So we knew that we had to build either a layer one from scratch ourselves, which is something we really didn't want to do, or we were going to have to build on another layer one and heavily customize it. Or we could use something like Cosmos, where they're a layer zero, and I'll explain what that means in a moment. But they've already got all of those Lego bricks. So we can take those Lego bricks and we can build our layer one in a very kind of modular way. But that, you know, 90% of that work has already been done, essentially, which means that we can add that 10% customization. It's going to save a lot of time, but it also means that we're going to then benefit from the Cosmos ecosystem, in this case, from that Lego brick ecosystem, because there's a lot of standardization in there. There's a lot of interoperability in there as well, which is really important for what we're looking to do. There's already a tried, tested consensus mechanism, and so on and so forth, right? So that's kind of that was really the kind of decision we went down, and we looked at a few different kind of layer zero ecosystems of where we could build our own layer one. So, you know, Polkadot came into it. It was before Avalanche, really. So, you know, or Avalanche was really just at a very, very early stage. So we kind of skipped over that. So we kind of landed back to Cosmos. So the way I describe it, and I just want to caveat, this is not my analogy, right? I am stealing this from someone else. I can't remember who it was, but it does. I have remembered it, you know, since that person mentioned it. But you know, think of a layer zero as like your street, right? Your residential street, and then the layer one is the foundation of each house, right? So that street is the fabric that is connecting all of those foundations.
Mm-hmm.
But those foundations are the kind of layer one, which is what is then developed on, is what is built on top of. So all of those kind of dApps, et cetera, are the houses on top of those foundations, right? So that's kind of how I think of it. So Cosmos is similar to that. It's the street, right? It's this hub where everything is like a fabric underneath it, right? Which provides all that standardization, provides that interoperability. And then you've got all of these layer ones that are built on top, including ourselves, Secret Network, you know, even one of the Binance chains is on there as well, and Osmosis and so on and so forth. So it's a really bustling ecosystem as well, and it's very, very developer heavy, very developer centric, mm-hmm. And that kind of played into our decision there. But I think, you know, really kind of testament to Cosmos is, you know, it's been well documented that there have been issues with the Solana ecosystem going down, blockchain going down, you know, and having outages. And I wouldn't say that's necessarily unusual, right? Everyone is still fairly nascent within this technology. But then if you come across to the Cosmos, you know, even when Terra collapsed or Luna collapsed, you know, you know, there's that massive, in effect, run on the bank where everyone was, you know, cashing out as quickly as possible. Imagine how many transactions were happening at that point and the level of activity that happened on network. The network was uninterrupted and it coped with it, and there were no bottlenecks and stuff like that. So it's been designed really, really well. The difference really to, apart from being a layer zero and Ethereum being a layer one, you know, the difference is to a big ecosystem like Ethereum, which a lot more people will be familiar with, is now Ethereum has moved from proof of work to proof of stake as a consensus mechanism, mm-hmm. and the Cosmos chains are all proof of stake as well. So that's a similarity. But the way that proof of stake is set up is actually quite different. So, mm-hmm. you know, on Ethereum, there's still, I believe, in the kind of tens of thousands of validator nodes that need to operate to kind of support that network. Whereas in the Cosmos ecosystem, the consensus mechanism that we use is called Tendermint. And Tendermint has this Byzantine fault tolerance, is the kind of methodology that's been integrated into it. And so the upper advised limit of validators within that network is actually 100 per chain. So there are some slight deviations from that, where some of the layer ones that are built there have kind of customized it to increase the validator set. But in general, it's a much smaller set of validators that's required to form the backbone of those networks as well. So it just means it's really lean, very, very quick, supports the high transactions, supports low cost, so supports the high transactional throughput, should I say, supports mm-hmm. the low transactional costs. And that makes it very appealing for anything that needs to run, you know, thousands and thousands of microtransactions, which is absolutely what, you know, we intend to do as we scale into
naturally
buy and selling compute.
So if you could touch a little bit on IBC, I don't know exactly how deep you are into it. I've had people much smarter than me explain it, and I think I feel like I 70 maybe 80% get it, but there's that little extra that maybe, who knows, maybe you can offer a different perspective. But yeah, so IBC, or inter-blockchain connectivity or compatibility, I forget which one it is.
Yes, so it's the inter-blockchain communication protocol. And so IBC, and it's quite funny because if you put IBC into Google, you're going to get like 40 different versions of that acronym from all different types of industries.
Yeah, of course.
So it's quite commonly used. But yeah, IBC is the Inter-Blockchain Communication Protocol. It was created by the Interchain Foundation, which is a key component, it's a key partner within the Cosmos ecosystem. Mm-hmm. They helped to develop the Tendermint consensus mechanism as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, of course.
But it's effectively a protocol that allows interoperability between all of the chains that are IBC enabled. So within the Cosmos system, if we wanted to, if we wanted to work close with Juno, for example, or Secret mm-hmm. and one of the other chains, is we set up a relayer between ourselves, and then we're IBC compatible between each other. So we don't need to go write some custom protocol or anything like that ourselves. We don't have to go build a bridge, which is what you're seeing between other networks. We simply have a kind of relayer in place, and then we can use the existing IBC protocol. So that means that if we look at the kind of Cosmos ecosystem, I think there's around about 100, somewhere between 100, 150 layer ones within there. That gives us a huge amount of layer one protocols that we can be interoperable with, right? With relatively little amount of work to do. So, and that was kind of one of the reasons why we chose Cosmos, because IBC wasn't ready at that point, but it was something that they had written a white paper about and they were starting to develop. And we saw that, we kind of placed our bets in it and saw that as the future of interoperability between chains. So even though that was, very much designed to start within the Cosmos, mm-hmm. what's actually happened now is, Near Protocol outside the Cosmos were, I believe, were the first ones to kind of test it and implement it. Ethereum has successfully tested it now as well. So IBC is quickly becoming the kind of standard across, inside and outside of the Cosmos, across the wider blockchain ecosystem, which is, which will be fantastic. Once we've got that standardization, it's the way that I would kind of draw parallels to a previous kind of technology of similar type, right, in terms of what it's delivering, is if you go back to the kind of early 90s and the internet, mm-hmm. you had all these separate telco networks that were set up. There was that isolation. So very much like the early blockchains, you had all these like kind of separate siloed islands, if you like, and nothing to connect them together. So, someone came out with TCP/IP as a protocol back in the, I believe it was the early 90s. I might have my dates wrong, so yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on that. Have a look, do your own research. But, TCP/IP was a way to standardize all that and mean that any of these telco networks could communicate with each other. And that's where we feel, or how we felt, and why we made a decision about Cosmos, because of the IBC protocol and what it would bring to the network.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So with IBC, with actually bridging a token from one chain to another, how easy is that process?
It's very easy. I wouldn't be able to give you the full kind of technical mm-hmm. rundown on exactly how that works, but it's not like a bridge, like a wormhole, for example, which is a very commonly used bridge where there's a kind of liquidity pool that's mm-hmm. At the middle or sat either end. It's more that is going, it's routing via a DEX potentially, where that's being swapped in real time, but the instruction is being agreed at both ends. So if I've got chain number one over here and Kudos over here, and we're doing a transaction between each mm-hmm. other, we're doing that verification between each other. So there's that messaging that's saying, I'm sending you this, thank you for your message, I confirm that I'm going to receive it, and you send a message back. So that's kind of where I draw the analogy with TCP/IP, but within that, there's a swap that's happening on a kind of DEX to make that happen.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, so now let's dive into Kudos more specifically. And so basically, really quick, what kind of overarching problem are you trying to solve? Would you mind describing the problem and then how you're trying to solve it?
Yeah, so I guess within the if we stick specifically to this kind of Web 3 space and what we're looking to solve is this, it's just a very limited amount of options for infrastructure which is suitable to Web 3 developers, right? And I'm not just talking about from a topology point of view or infrastructure type, but I'm actually talking about from a philosophical point of view as well.
Yeah, of
Right, so
course.
it's we are all big believers of decentralization, as I mentioned right at the beginning. That's why people have come into Web3 because we believe is that there is a new way that we can own our own data. That we are the masters of our own destiny in that kind of sense, right? And we believe that the whole world should be included in this, right? Not just the few big tech companies and stuff like that, right? So that's the kind of what has all driven us into this kind of Web3 space, or a lot of us into this Web3 space, definitely ourselves. But then we look at that and we say, right, you've got these layer ones that have been building, and a lot of a lot of those kind of bigger layer ones, proof of stakes. The Ethereums, the Solanas, there was a point until fairly recently where in some cases over 70% of their core network was in AWS, a big centralized cloud company. And so what happens if, okay, it's very unlikely, but what happens if AWS goes offline completely? You've lost your network, right? And that has happened. There was a couple of years ago, you had WhatsApp, Meta, Instagram going down because of outages on the Amazon network and stuff. That was a that was kind of that shows there was kind of limited options in the Web3 space. So how can we do that differently, right? So how can we
Yeah,
connect?
so sorry to interject on that, but basically, a lot of these projects, they don't necessarily need such a service at all. It's they could run a bare metal node, for example, that just kind of connects and does its own server, but just for scale and convenience sake, everyone just uses something like AWS instead. Is that kind of correct?
Absolutely. It's a convenience thing. As you mentioned, it's a convenience thing. So, and so there's that kind of element to it. So you've had the layer one protocols build, then you've had like the DeFi season, which is the first real kind of use case on top of that it's built in smart contracts. DeFi came in, then you've had NFTs, and you've had Metaverse Autumn and all these different seasons and that, right? And the thing about them is they're all applications and they're all going to need computing power and they're all still going out with it on AWS or Google Cloud or so on and so forth. So, how can we solve that problem and bring an actual Web3 computing platform that is better suited that kind of native Web3 experience, but also the way that that's being distributed over multiple different service providers now, but that will move out towards the edge and consumer edge devices as well in the future to get gradually to get more decentralized as we as we scale the network and we overcome technical milestones and stuff. So like I say, right at the beginning, we're not the only ones. There are other projects within this space that are achieving the same thing. You've got your kind of Render network is very well known. You've got a Cache network, which is also a Cosmos chain, by the way. So in there, you've got Gensing. So there's a few others coming in, but it's a limited amount, and the amount of computing power that's being consumed is just growing and growing and growing exponentially, especially with the explosion of AI and kind of other compute intensive workloads. But when you compare kind of traditional computing, I guess if you want to call it that now, that infrastructure as a service market has grown at around about 23% year on year. That's probably gone up now because of the AI explosion. But blockchain is growing at a quicker rate than that. It's still a tiny fraction because it's a much, much newer technology, but the growth rate is quicker. And that transition from Web 2 to Web 3 is happening. So, we wanted to make sure that foundation is there to make sure that there is an option out there for the Web3 developers to be able to access that scalable compute in the way they wanted to. So that's the problem that we set out to solve. We launched Kudos Intercloud fairly recently, which is that it's that Web3 front end. So that's scalable compute. So that went live in around about January time. And quite simply put, you connect your wallet, in this case, Kepler initially, but we're going to be adding MetaMask as well. And that's already done the kind of verification of funds, because that sees balance, you top up with Kudos token, and then you can build your machines in a permissionless way. So there's no KYC, there's no personal details that need to go into that. So that's the kind of change. That's what the native Web3 way of interacting with it is. That's what, you know, I'm kind of alluding to when I mentioned that. And then we'll add further token support as well. So users in other blockchains will be able to use the token that's native to them.
Yeah, for sure. It's so that at that stage, it's sort of like when you go to be a cloud computing customer or whatever else, you usually go to Amazon, you do all that kind of stuff. But instead of that, you just now access it in a sort of Web3 way using Kudos token, obviously a cryptocurrency and all that, in order to just interact with the whole system. And so It just kind of supplants that. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's correct. And underneath the hood, right? So once you've gone through that kind of payment front end, because that's the kind of Web3 experience, underneath the hood, for us personally, it's a distributed cloud computing network. Mm-hmm. So that distributed means that we are scaling infrastructure on multiple different vendors all around the world, right? So we're not putting it into AWS or Azure or GCP or the hyperscalers, mm-hmm. because actually they're at a premium, and so that kind of defeats the object of what we're trying to achieve here. You know, what we're doing is we're actually, you know, bringing on suppliers all around the world that are coming from, you know, remote regions, but they're also coming from the main traffic hub region. So we have that kind of split footprint. We're bringing on, you know, high performance computing service providers that have got lots of the kind of GPU hardware that's required for the complicated kind of AI parallel workloads. And, you know, I suppose we could even look at kind of maybe even generative AI for kind of NFT creation or something like that, if we wanted to kind of give it more of a kind of, you know, a blockchain work use case. But we're mixing that with the kind of traditional data center type locations in the main traffic hubs, because, you know, for a lot of the applications they're building, they're still going to need that latency sensitivity. So that latency just means the speed between the server and the customer that's interacting with the server. And that needs to, in some cases, like if you're playing a game, for example, that needs to be a low latency for a really good experience. So we've had to kind of blend that footprint. So, you know, right now we're up to around about 11 or 12 unique locations. And that's coming from around, I think it's like 7 or 8 unique vendors, but that's going to scale, you know, quickly. That already gives us a really, really good base of resources there that's now available through Kudos Intercloud, but that's just going to keep scaling and scaling and scaling. And like I mentioned at the beginning, the idea is that, you know, once we've built that first set of suppliers to the network, is then we look to how can we bring on more consumer edge devices, so you're kind of gaming consoles, PCs, those other connected devices, and it gradually makes it more and more decentralized. So the most common question I always get is, well, why haven't you done that to begin with, right? And the reason being is because the you know, when we've been building up the kind of opportunities, speaking with the developers that are ultimately going to be the ones that are consuming this, they still need a lot of that computing power to be kind of tightly clustered together with very high bandwidth, with high uptime guarantees, with, you know, with high security in place in a physical sense. And so, you know, the majority of that opportunity is still at this moment going into the kind of data center type facilities. But rather than us relying on one provider, like I said, we have multiple providers, and that creates the distributed network. So it's kind of a step one towards that kind of democratized cloud, if you like.
Yeah. So if we were to sort of compare structurally with like an AWS type of thing, it's right now like a blockchain front end to sort of a corollary, in that these kinds of data centers have been handpicked, as it were, and then at some point it's going to be, all right, now it's open participation, now anyone can run their own infra and participate in this, but like right now you want to start with a solid functional foundation and then let the decentralized elements kind of go in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing is sustainability is really, really important to us. So one of the reasons why we set this business up, because in the previous business, our main customer was cloud service providers themselves, right? We were providing the space and power to them as was the primary service, and we just saw a lot of underutilization. So that was one of the kind of inspirations for Kudo, was like, how can we utilize all of that spare capacity, right, and tap into that, because that in itself has a good positive carbon impact insofar that when you are building servers, that's the most intensive part. That's the biggest carbon footprint, actually comes from the building the server rather than the running of the server afterwards. So how can we tap into the spare capacity? Now things have kind of evolved because of this explosion of AI and the demand on certain GPUs, where actually there isn't any spare ones of those, right? So what do we look at? So a lot of the suppliers that we brought onto our network, and this accounts for all of the suppliers that are providing GPUs, are renewable energy powered, or have a very high percentage of renewable energy powered, and they might have some clean energy in there, like nuclear or some kind of innovative gas flare-in type thing, where methane out of the air. So that's been and converted to electricity. So that's been a big focus on from us, is focusing on which of these service providers are renewable energy powered. That gets more difficult when you start going out to consumer devices like gaming PCs and stuff, because they're plugged into the local grid, and that grid is going to have a mix of fossil fuel and
Of
renewables
course.
and so forth. So we need to work that piece out. Is it an offsetting thing? That piece needs to be worked out and fleshed out, which is why, again, another reason why we started with the kind of data center type locations first.
Yeah, of course. And it's like there's only so many problems you could solve at once. Already solving the core of decentralized cloud thing is massive. And so being able to do that in any way is kind of a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's lots of problems to solve, and it's timing. Yeah,
Of course. And so now just from like this the structural perspective of outages, let's just say. So with AWS or something, and again, keeping on throwing in the boogeyman, like the bank corollary, except for the data center thing. If there's just an outage, then everything goes down. Everyone who counts on that goes down. What's the kind of outage resistance provided by something like Kudos, both today and then also when the whole decentralizing infrastructure part happens?
Yeah, sure. So if you were to go into Kudos into cloud, you can, because we've got multiple locations, what you can actually do is when you're customizing, so when you're building your virtual machine specification, you can save that as a template, right? So once you built it, you can save that as a template. That means if you want to spin up another one with the same specification, is that you just build it from the template again. So you press on that, and it's going to auto build it. But importantly, you can choose a different location there, right? So the Kudo Compute itself, and Kudos into cloud, which is the kind of web three interface to that, is separate from any of those provider environments. So if any one of those providers go down, then you can still access Kudos into cloud or the underlying network there. And so in that case, you'll be able to click from template and bring a virtual machine up in another location during that period. Now, that will get more sophisticated over time, and you'll be able to able to automatically redistribute based on the kind of configs you put in. So if you're setting up something for like high availability, then the functionality will be there over time. So it does that automated in an automated way. But having said that, we have got customers that will be doing something similar like that, because we've added tools like Terraform, which allow this kind of functionality to be built on the customer end as well. So yeah, there's again, that's just one of the big benefits of being a distributed network, is that we have these different underlying service provider environments. So if one goes down, you have got, unless it's some in multiple ones in the same country, and they have this country blackout, for example. But that's again why we've made sure that we've got different countries on board, different geographies around the world, different underlying vendors. So you have this kind of layer of redundancy and resilience in place that's available to you.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty pretty fascinating. Now we were talking about sort of the hard questions of decentralization, censorship resistance, and structure. So first of all, obviously, as a Cosmos-based chain, it's pretty, you already laid out the basic structure of like staking nodes, etc. Now, as far as the actual like development and running of the team and stuff, what's the structure of that? Have you got a DAO or something? Is it currently sort of a company type setup on top of that? What are the kind of plans around that? And then also like initial token distribution and stuff, just those fun things.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone wants to have a look at our existing tokenomics, they can just search the Kudos white paper in Google. It's always the quickest way to find a document, by the way. So you know, just put it into search engine and come up, and it's section 4 within there shows the tokenomics. So it shows the pie chart, if you like, with the different buckets that tokens get minted into, and it's all very, very transparent on there. So to come back to your question, no, we're not set up as a DAO right now. The tokens does act as a governance token as well. So there is, we quite often have proposals into our network from token holders. We put proposals in there ourselves if there's going to be, you know, big changes we're suggesting, or projects we want to work on, whatever it's going to look like. People are able to vote on that. So there is governance within there, but you know, we're not set up as a DAO. We are a core team at present. That will very likely continue for at least, I would say, the next kind of, well, for 2024 within that. And then, yeah, absolutely, we want to decentralize. But I think it's important from a kind of initially when you're kind of setting up and you've got that speed, is you kind of need that core team in place, in my opinion, right? So I know there will be different opinions out there. But you need those decisions to be made. You need those, to that strategy to be made. And if you go like pure DAO from the beginning, I think that's quite, it's ambitious, but it's quite difficult to do that. And that can actually slow things down. So we do know other projects where being in the kind of DAO setup is almost kind of, comes a bit of a kind of red tape exercise to get things done. And I think that may have kind of hampered the speed that they've been able to kind of achieve their vision, if you like. So that's just my own personal opinion. Like I said, there'll be different opinions there. But importantly, the token is, kind of governance within that. And then,
of course,
you're absolutely right in that, we're a proof of stake network. So that's lots of independent token holders that are, securing that network by locking their value into that. The validators are independent as well. So there's, that's the kind of decentralization of the blockchain itself. For Kudos Intercloud, that's a bit different because, we're not saying it's a decentralized cloud yet. It's a distributed cloud for the kind of reasons that I've mentioned. So, we have our ambitions to work towards that decentralization, but it's a really tough thing to do. So, if I kind of just give you one example, if a gaming PC, right? I've got a gaming PC next to me right here, right? It's got a nice graphics card in there, nice
Nvidia. Of course.
3080, I think it is, it's really, really cool GPU. I'd love to put that on and earn some money there from compute, but that this machine might go off, right? I haven't got two separate power feeds coming into it to make sure that it never turns off. My electricity price might go up, and I might decide actually I'm just going to turn this off. My local network might go down. I've got fiber coming into the house, but it has outages at times. So they don't have the level of uptime and reliability. The bandwidth is smaller coming into here than it would be coming into a data center. So there's things that make it very different. So if you're on the other end, if you're the person that's got that workload that needs to be sent out and executed, then the majority of those available workloads now that we can monetize over the network are not suitable for those kind of end devices yet. But if we look to something like SETI at home, these kind of large scientific projects, simulations, those kind of things, where they don't need to have local storage. They can automatically redistribute. So if one node goes down, it just flips over because they're not having to carry the storage with it. They just need that kind of processing power. Then, you know, that is very suitable to these types of devices. And, you know, that's something that we'll kind of bring in later. So it's really a case of we need to support the alternative types of workloads out there to then bring on those types of devices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now let's talk something that I'm sure is at least in the old school crypto world is definitely like a, I guess a common like fantasy scenario or like worst case fantasy scenario of like the censorship thing. And it's like when people talk about what happens if people want to take down Bitcoin, you can't take down Bitcoin. And then you have the whole, you know, open source decentralized development, and then you have the whole, okay, well then you got to go after miners, and then China did ban a lot of mining, and then the miners disappeared and just popped up somewhere else, and the network kept, you know, had some, I wouldn't call them outages, but had some delays, and then eventually kept going. And there's a lot of argumentation on this. It maybe not as fashionable today as it was back in my day, but it still is something that, you know, is kind of important. And so I guess let's present two different scenarios, right? One is the kudos of today, and the other is the idealized kudos of the hopefully relatively near future, like next few years. So if a, let's just talk at the highest level of like, what about a state actor? If, for example, some financial, let's just for hypothetical purposes, say something like Zcash moves to proof of stake, and then all Zcash validators are, for the most part, they use Kudos to run because they want censorship-resistant transactions. And at some point, a state actor says, you know what? This is not good. We need to stop the network. And then they were like, oh, guess what? We can't because it's distributed across, you know, a whole bunch of nodes. Where are those nodes hosted? Oh, well, they're like a third of them on AWS, but then two-thirds of them are on things like Kudos. And then they're like, okay, now we know what we have to do. We have to stop these guys. So then you get like a cease and desist letter. The Kudos core team gets a cease and desist letter. You must immediately stop servicing these nodes or, you know, face consequences kind of thing. What's the short term, like today, like literally tomorrow, you wake up, it's your worst nightmare, right? Kind of thing. And then the 3 or 4, whatever, years from now version of that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. I mean, I think if we think about Bitcoin is, you know, the purpose of Bitcoin, or at least the original purpose, I know it's kind of moved on slightly, was to become digital cash, right?
Mm-hmm,
your channel here is named after it, right? So it's it's to become the finance chain, if you want to look at it in that way. And so the decentralization that you get from proof of work network, and that there's nobody to write an email to say please close it down because it's just code on there. Yeah, absolutely see that. Kudos is not trying to be a digital cash, right? We're not trying to be a currency for people. It's you know, the coin itself or the token itself serves a utility within the platform, or multiple utilities within the platform for to enable compute transactions, right, between the buyer and the seller on that. So it has a different purpose, which is why we felt like we didn't need to go down the proof of work route, and we could do it on proof of stake. I mean, there's energy efficiencies and everything like that on that, which is a good story. But, you know, ultimately we needed a network that had high throughput transactions and low cost transactional costs, right? Because that's what enable all of these different microtransactions. So that was our view on there. Now, to come back to your point on what if the US government came through and said, we want you to close down the service to all of these kind of validators that are running on you. Now, we can't actually, if you think about it, so we can't see what that end user is doing on those servers. We have no access to that, right? We're providing infrastructure as a service. Mm-hmm. You know, so one, you know, which ones are we closing down? Which virtual machines are we closing down here? Because we don't actually know what people are doing on them. But when they're coming through, they're kind of ticking a box that they agree to the terms and conditions, which, you know, basically means they're not doing anything illicit with that kind of computing power. But at the same time, we have no way, and that's the, you know, that's by purpose, by design, because that's security. We don't want to be seeing that. going to be liable for seeing what's going on there. So it's kind of part. And then underneath, like I said, it's a distributed network that's going into multiple different environments. It's not as if they can come and close down one environment and they've removed the problem that they're foreseeing. It's a tricky one. What I would always say to kind of any network that is set up, you know, we did this with our own validator set, is, you know, whilst anyone that meets a minimum requirement can spin up a validator and become part of the network, right? They don't even need to talk to us. They can become part of the validator network just going through that process. You know, by in general, we know who our validators are because we've had conversations with them. They've been interested to find out more about projects. So there's a kind of friendliness between them. You know, there's a relationship between all the validators. But, you know, so we use that opportunity to say that we don't want any more than 10 to 15% of the validators on our network with the same underlying vendor, right? So, you know, and we want to make sure that we've got a good geographical spread as well. So, you know, if you're coming onto the network, where are you looking to host? Well, we could do it in either South Africa or we could do it in Sao Paulo. Brilliant. All right, we've got someone in Sao Paulo, so please could you do it in South Africa? And that gives us a, you know, a different part of the globe. You know, which providers are you doing this with? Oh, we're actually going to do this as Bearbet. Brilliant. And so on and so forth, right? So we've had a level of oversight to that. We're not making the decisions for them. We're just, you know, providing a bit of guidance on there based on, you know, what we know is already on the network. So again, it would come down the same. If we were actively working with another layer one protocol, and they decide that, yeah, Kudos Intercloud would actually be a really good one they can promote to their validator community of where mm-hmm. to spin up. We would advise exactly the same thing. Do not put more than kind of 10 to 15% through Kudos Compute or Kudos Intercloud. Maybe you could increase that slightly because it's distributed underneath. You've got different vendors. Mm-hmm. But we would still, you know, recommend, you know, having different paths out there for that reason. So I'm not sure if that answers or it doesn't answer your question. I know it's not kind of full response to the kind of censorship on there. Mm-hmm. But you know, again, it comes back to, that cloud network is not decentralized, it's distributed at the time being. So we need to do the best with what we can over a distributed network. When it becomes decentralized in the future and you are able to run nodes on different types of end user devices or however that looks, you know, things evolve and the technology may change, then I think we'll probably need to, you know, kind of revisit what you're asking there and see how censorship proof it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is the next few years, let's say 5 years, look like for Kudos?
Yeah, I mean for us, our full focus is just on making it as easy as possible for developers in lots of different chains to access the computing power they require. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of the North Star for us, or at least, you know, that's the kind of the value prop that we want to bring to the blockchain ecosystem. And so the everything therefore in a strategy point of view is, how do we get to that, right? How do we unlock support for further wallets? How do we unlock support for further chains, for further tokens, to really kind of break down those barriers at each stage? It's a big task, of course, but you know, that's kind of what we're set out, and we've already started to make really good progress there. And then, you know, if we're not talking about necessarily the Intercloud products and compute, we're talking about actually people developing on our chain. Is that, you know, why are people developing on the Kudos blockchain? You know, you've got Ethereum out there, you've got Solana, you've got Polygon, right, which have got big, you know, communities, big liquidity out there. So why would you build on another layer one? And I think it really just comes back to the whole interoperability and compute part again, right? So these applications, as they grow in usership, user base, as they grow in maturity, as these metaverses and as these games get more and more sophisticated in their graphics, and they need even more infrastructure underneath, and that infrastructure needs to be spread all around the world to be close to customers, is that we have an advantage of the fact that you can directly connect into that network from the blockchain, from our blockchain itself. So yeah, that's at least our focus over the next kind of year or two, Joel. and then who knows, right? This pace moves so quickly. There may be something else that comes into it. But I think it's always going to come back to that core, which is providing scalable compute.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, this has been quite the enlightening chat. Where can people follow you in Kudos to find out more in the future?
Yeah, so drop into our Telegram, our X, communities as well. So just search Kudos, so Kudos. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to find them. We've got a really active Discord server as well. Again, just search Kudos and it's open, so you'll be able to find that. If you want to talk to me directly, then feel free to drop a message to Kudo Pete. And that's the same on X as it is on Telegram. But yeah, we've got a lot of the team that are within the kind of main community channels as well, and we're always keen to talk, speak wherever we can. So I was going to say smash that like button. Then I was on the other side.
Yeah, definitely smash the like button, which does not exist at the time of this recording, but when you're watching, it's definitely will.
But no, it's been great. It's been great to be here. So thank you very much for inviting me along today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being on. All right. Well, you have a good one, huh?
Thank you very much, Joel. It's a pleasure speaking to you.